Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with my Science Hour for June 22nd, 2023. And I'm sorry I missed last week. This is very, very unusual. I do not miss this show out of 23 years that I've been doing this commercial-free show. I've missed a less than maybe two handfuls of times, maybe less than 10 times total. But anyway, sometimes it's just like all the things fall in the wrong place or whatever. So anyway, I apologize for that. And some people wrote in and said, are you okay? Yeah, everything's fine. I'm okay. Just sometimes things get too busy and out of control. I first want to give mention here to my guardian angel, plural, I think. I think I have a whole fleet of them that have helped me greatly in my life. And if you're not aware of your guardian angel, they are there. They are hovering over you. They are very much there. And for me, there's no way I would have gotten to my point in my life where without some extra special help, let's just put it that way. And sometimes it's physical help. Sometimes it's mental health help. Sometimes it's things going. This is what made me think about this, that I was doing something and it just wasn't working out, and it just wasn't working out, and I'm just frustrated. And it turns out that it was really good that what I was trying to do did not work out, because there were some difficulties that I didn't know about. I'm not going to go into detail here. But if I would have gone through with what I was doing, it was just something online, it was nothing life-threatening or anything, but it would have been a very costly mistake because of something that I did not know at the time. And so anyway, that's a case where it's like, the ancient Greeks used to call it the fates, or they would talk about the gods working for or against them. And really what was going on were the guardian angels and other angels too, of some of them not so great, who are working literally against you. Because if you're a person doing good, they don't like that. So at any rate, we do live in this world, physical world, and too many people get caught up in the physical world and have totally no clue of the spiritual world that is just everywhere around them. And I always say that I have many guardian angels to maintain all the different tasks and keep me on track. So anyway, look around and say thank you to your guardian angel. And also understand that you have a spirit that is alive, living in your body. And because in science, you cannot put a meter on it. You can't put two probes and measure a voltage for your spirit. You can't see it. You can't detect it. And so actually there are ways of detecting some residuals, and it's called your aura. And it may be related to your spirit. I mean, we don't really know a lot about this. People have studied and have delved into this much further. Like, say, in India or in the Buddhists, for example, that spend a lot of time dealing with social issues or just psychological issues. The ancients used to say that love, for example, came from your heart, and that was not associated with your brain, because your brain is calculating, it's logical, it's reasoning. And love, for example, is not. It's anything but reasonable. Or the feeling that, the feelings that go along with love, and the love you have for, say, parents or children or relatives or good friends or all of that. Anyway, so just a little beginning there. Say thank you to your guardian angel and make use of them. Acknowledging them also makes use of them in that, they know that you're recognizing that they're doing a good job. Just quickly, the MR5 whole house water filters are on the summertime sale on my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, and you get an additional 10% off. So go there and check it out. Make sure you have water filtration and you are water independent. That's the issue. Are you water independent? When you turn on that faucet, even though you may be connected to a city source of water or municipal water system or maybe a well, there's stuff in that water that you do not want in there. And one of the biggest health hazards becoming toxic because of the water that's in, you're putting it in your food, you're washing vegetables. You want this clean. And some people have, for example, the old standard gravity water filter in the kitchen. And that's, I still sell those. I have the best ones on the market. They fit all of the stainless steel containers out there and plastic containers that have ever been made, or you could make your own, but it does not filter hot water. And the water coming out of your faucet is not filtered. So the biggest dose of toxins that you get on a daily basis is in the daily shower. That's when you get blasted. Anyway, I'm not going to go through any more of that. It's on the webpage, jmccsci.com. Oops, that's the main webpage. Start over. jmccwaterfilters.com, and that's with an S, plural, jmccwaterfilters.com. Okay. The last 90 days, the dollar, the dolero, of the United States has plummeted. It has crashed big time. And this is against all currencies. If you look at, say, the Mexican peso or the third world country monetary systems, the dollar has crashed relative to all of them. Most of the other ones have remained relatively stable. But in the last 45 days, the dollar has lost probably 20% of its value. So if you're keeping your money in the United States and buying stuff in the United States, then probably things are about the same. You know, they say the housing market, things like that, they don't fluctuate that much based on foreign exchange rates. But, you know, one of the things that they have to clean up is this daily exchange rate going up and down every minute. Because all it does, there are people who make money off of this. And if they know advanced what the changes are going to be, then they can short sell or long sell or whatever else in exchange. And they simply grind money out of the system. And that is not working. That is not gaining value. That is not producing value. But anyway, just want to let you know that the good old U.S. dollar is crashing. And, you know, I want to talk just a little bit about the war in Ukraine in terms of economy. And the best thing that Putin can do is drag this thing out. Because it's like a cat playing with a mouse. And I've said this from the very beginning. They're saying, oh, Putin is losing the counteroffensive and all of this stuff. But what's going on is it's just sucking. You can just hear the sucking going on. They're just sucking the life out of Europe, out of the NATO countries, out of the United States. And it's a tremendous amount of money that's going into this thing. And Putin, all he has to do is, it's right at his back door, all he has to do is throw some shells out there, put up some tanks, go back and forth on a couple of front lines, and it's relatively cheap. We have to move it across an ocean, across a continent, just to get there, just to get the stuff there. So the amount of cost, relative cost, to Russia versus what the United States is putting the bill for, And of course, NATO isn't kicking in. They threw a couple tanks across there. But now they're going to buy tanks, but who's giving them money to do this? They're not footing the bill for this. The United States is. So there's all kinds of hidden money going into the Ukraine thing. And then the second result is that Russia and China are joining and have created a banking system completely devoid, and hundreds of countries have joined that banking system. So the United States, the dollar, and basically the dollar, which was the standard for monetary systems in the past, is just, you know, it's like a big crater in the ground, and this, you know, this surface material is just falling into the hole. There's nothing propping it up anymore. Okay, on to the next topic, which is June 21st. This was yesterday. June 21st, the longest day of the year, occurred at about 9:58 a.m. Central Time. So about 10 o'clock in the morning yesterday, the longest day of the year. And there's a few different ways of looking at this. But basically, I have this stuffed up nose, and so apologize for that. But there's a couple different ways of looking at this from a physical sense. If you're living on planet Earth, that just means that the day is the longest day of the year. And the Celts, my ancestors, celebrated June 21st as, and of course, they didn't call it June 21st, but that day when the day has the most amount of sunlight, that was the middle of their summer. That was the middle day of their summer because it was the longest day of the year. And so as you're approaching it you might call it the rear side of time, as you're approaching this day, the days are getting longer, and then all of a sudden June 21st comes, and after that the days are getting shorter. So it's really a midpoint. It's not the beginning of summer as we celebrate it. It's the middle of summer. But anyway, be that as it may, the other way of looking at this is that the spin axis of Earth lays in a plane that is, if you take a plane that comes out from the center of the sun and you have it vertical, the spin axis of the sun, you put a plane there and you keep it on Earth. In other words, as Earth goes around in its orbit, it's the day in which the spin axis of Earth lies in that plane. So that's another way of looking at it. But there's an issue going on with Chichen Itza, and I get a kick out of this, because on this day, what they do is, well, a bunch of people go down to the pyramid there, and watch as the sun goes down. It casts a shadow from one of the stair lines that's going up to the top of the pyramid, and it looks like a snake moving along the ground. And these people go probably smoke some weed or something, take something psychedelic or something, and watch this shadow move. But the reality is, that pyramid is not northeast, south, and west. The only reason that snake shadow occurs is because the pyramid is not aligned with northeast, south, and west, the current northeast, south, and west. And so it's about 13.5 degrees off. So the point is that the pyramids, those and many other archaeological locations around the world, are not pointing to what we call true north today. The geographical, the geological, or the spin axis of Earth. I'm not talking about magnetic field, I'm talking about the spin axis, north pole of Earth. And so these old sites were rebuilt onto the old gridwork, these people not understanding at the time, and they, because of that, they are not pointing to true north today. But we can triangulate all of these different locations, something I did back in the 1990s with physical equipment on the ground. I went to Mexico with surveying equipment, transit, and had help holding the transit measuring rod, which is the person stands at a distance. Now, of course, all of this is done with lasers and GPS and everything. That was back in the days when there was no laser surveying equipment, when you had to go out there and stand there and hold a pole, not a little mirror, but a pole, maintain it vertically, and there was divisions on this, just like a ruler, and you'd look through the transit, and you would measure, and that's how you measure distances, etc. That's what I did, and also then determined that the cities were off kilter, and then when I triangulated them, the Old North Pole turned out to be in Hudson's Bay. You know, the way I put this when I talked about it in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, I talked about it as the Old North Pole being in the state of Ontario, north of the state of Michigan. That's the way I talked about it. Okay, so there we go. Yesterday, longest day of the year. Now the days are getting shorter. So if you're in those northern climates, starting to get shorter and shorter days, and potentially colder. But it's very interesting that the heat of the summer lags behind. You would think that the longest day of the year would also be potentially the hottest day of the year, give or take a day or two. But what's going on is now what happens is the wind pattern shift, and the wind is going to come from the south, dragging up that hot tropical air into the northern states. And so the hottest part of the summer, July and August, which have shorter days, actually turn out to be the hotter days. And it's because I always say, if the wind's from the south, it's warm. If the wind's from the north, it's going to be cold relative to average temperatures. Okay, number six on my list here. And it's, if you looked at my list, as I'm preparing my notes, I start preparing my notes a week, sometimes 2 weeks in advance. And so they're not in the order that I want to talk about. So I have number one up on the very top left, and the number two is actually at the bottom right. And I have like a line pattern through this piece of paper to direct me from 1, 2, 3, 4. Anyway, right now we're going to number six on my list. And this is from a listener that wrote in asking about black holes and why all of the fabulous amount of coverage being given to black holes. And I see it too. It's kind of everywhere. Oh, here's a black hole. Right there's a black hole. There's one in your backyard. There's one in your ear. Like the magician comes up and pulls the coin out of your ear. Hey, you got a black hole in your ear. It's everywhere. Every time you pick up a newspaper, go online, look at a video, there's another black hole story. They're everywhere now. They're you know, the next star over, black hole. Everything is a black hole now. And so you got to ask yourself, what's going on here? How come all of a sudden we got black holes coming out of our ears? They're all over the place. Well, it's all baloney, because literally there is no such thing as a black hole. General relativity is a completely false theory. And Albert Einstein, who is the guy who invented general relativity, made that exact same statement. Made the statement that general relativity has no basis. It has no basis in theoretical basis, nor in experimental physics. And I've talked about this many times before, but I'll just go through a few of these things. Black holes are a result of space-time warping. In other words, as you get more and more mass together, the distortion of space becomes so severe that light cannot get out of it. And so that's why they call it a black hole, because the light cannot leave. So it's just a black thing. But isn't it incredibly amazing that people take pictures of black holes? They go, there it is, that bright thing right in the middle. There's the black hole. Well, theoretically, you should not be able to take a picture of a black hole. You should be able to see some things going around the event horizon, around the black hole, but people are claiming to have taken pictures and composite pictures of the black hole at the center, allegedly at the center of our galaxy. But here's a couple issues. When first of all, there's no experimental basis for general relativity. Now, let me go into this. And if there's some physicists out there, just shut up and sit in your chair until you get through this. The Arthur Eddington experiment, where he goes down, there's a total eclipse, total solar eclipse. He goes down and he sets up his telescope and he takes a picture of the sky in the area that the eclipse was going to be. And then he takes a picture when the eclipse is going on of the star pattern. And according to general relativity, they should move outwards because the light would bend around the sun to get to us, not come to us in a straight line. So the motion of the stars should be outwards, okay? And so because the light that would be coming straight gets bent in and focusing before us on planet Earth. So anyway, the bottom line is that the star pattern should, as you move out away from the sun, the biggest effect should be right around the sun, and lesser and lesser to a lesser degree as you move out away from the sun. So Eddington goes and does this, and he's kind of an egotistical guy. He's a narcissist. If ever there was a narcissist in physics, and there's a lot of them, this guy sits right at the peak, the top. So what did Eddington do? And by the way, this experiment has never, ever been duplicated. There, I'll talk about another experiment that was a general relativity experiment, which was a total disaster. And I happen to know about it because I was at Cornell University when the data came in. And they scrubbed the data. They swept it under the rug. But anyway, I'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, Eddington cherry-picked the data. And I have seen the original photograph of Eddington. And the movement of the stars is all over the place. It's over there, it's out there, it's inwards, it's sideways. The movement of the stars, and there was movement of the stars, is all over the place. So what did Eddington do? He cherry-picked the data. He cherry-picked the data. He took five or six data points that looked half-assed close, excuse the expression, but that's the best thing I can say about it, out of maybe about 50 stars, which were all over the place, the change in position. He took a couple of them, and he goes, oh, that fits pretty close. And he published the information and said, end of story, proves general relativity. So the data, the entire basis of general relativity, the Eddington experiment, which has never been duplicated, he cherry-picked and faked the data. Unbelievable. So that's one thing. Now, tell you a little story. When I was at Cornell University, after classes in the afternoon, every day, literally every day, the scientists of interest would converge in a big room. It was up in the science building, and that's where the NASA scientists would gather when the data came in from the space probes, etc., and there was all of this activity going on. Well, at the time, they had a space probe that was orbiting Venus. And Venus was about to go around behind the sun. So anyway, this orbiting spacecraft around Venus, the position, I mean, they knew it exactly, exact, because they knew where Venus was, so they knew the orbit of this spacecraft. So they knew exactly where the spacecraft was, and it was sending an electromagnetic signal back to Earth. And so the idea was that as this spacecraft moved around behind the sun, we should be able to see the bending of light, and that should make the satellite look like it's farther away from the sun than what it actually is as Venus moves around behind the sun. And then, of course, it disappears. The data, the real data, the actual data, showed this satellite bouncing all over the place. back and forth, up and down, all over the place, and they knew exactly where it was. And of course, then they started scratching body parts and trying to imagine, well, could there be some kind of other effect or this or that? And for me, here I'm sitting in this crowd going, these bozos don't know anything. They don't have a clue. And what I understood was it was the electromagnetic effect of the non-uniform electric field of the sun, which was caused by a non-uniform distribution of protons in the solar wind, the solar capacitor, all the work that I had been doing, the induced electric dipole redshift, all of these things came together, and I said, that's what's going on. And that's why the data is not consistent, because the electric field near the sun is very wild. I mean, it's just wild, and you have solar flares coming up, and it changes the local electric field, etc. And by the way, that's what Einstein was looking for when he died. That's why he was interested in Velikovsky. That's why when Einstein died, everything else was pushed aside on his desk, and there was the Worlds in Collision book was open. By the way, just a little bit of an anecdote there. I was good friends with a guy named Warner Sizemore, who was Velikovsky's personal secretary through all those years of craziness and Carl Sagan and everything else. Warner Sizemore was there every day because he was a neighbor of Velikovsky. He was Velikovsky's private secretary. He recorded all the talks. He maintained all the records, who came, who left, who talked to Velikovsky. And Einstein was a buddy of Velikovsky and would show up in evening time and come over for supper and play the violin before they would eat supper and talk. But anyway, Einstein was very interested in Velikovsky's work because Velikovsky talked about electric fields. And Einstein, what he was working on was the unification of the fields when he died. He said, how come we cannot unify the fields of electricity, magnetism, gravity, the strong weak forces, nuclear forces, etc.? And there must be some kind of cohesive physics here, and he was looking for that. And he also realized that general relativity lacked the total field. It's in his own autobiography, Out of My Later Years. It's the book. It's Einstein's own autobiography. It's called Out of My Later Years. And he says specifically in there that general relativity is false because it does not contain the total field. Okay, so anyway, there are two experiments that conclusively prove that gravity could not be the cause of this bending of light, this distortion of light around the sun. Because gravity is a constant. The gravitational field around the sun is very constant. The electric field is wildly changing. And so anyway, the whole basis of general relativity is a farce. Okay, now you add all of the mathematics, the tensor analysis, everything else that goes with it. That's all great. And there are some parts of general relativity that are very good. The analysis of curved space-time is very good, the understanding that as you're moving through space, you're moving along basically a curved line, but in the space-time continuum of gravity, you're moving along a curved line. In the world of gravity, you're moving along a straight line. So the curvature of space as a new definition of Newtonian physics, new understanding of Newtonian physics, very good, very excellent. But anyway, okay, so that's essentially the issue. So if general relativity is false, then how do we get all these black holes coming out your ear and nose and everywhere else? Every time you turn around today, black hole, hey, there's another one. There's one right there. There's one in your backyard. It's just garbage, pure garbage. And I think I know they're just trying to get attention because the world of astrophysics is kind of, it's not a top of people's list these days. Maybe making enough money so you can feed your kids is more a priority for most people. Not many people that interested. And of course, these people These scientists are looking for funding. Some of them are even vying for Nobel Prizes. So anyway, that's why you're seeing black holes under every leaf anymore. And it's all garbage. Garbage science. Garbage in, garbage out. Okay, so I'm glad I got to do a little discussion of that. And this story is much bigger. I have a course that I sell on my webpage. It's part of the library package. It's called DVD number 4, University Level Astrophysics, Astronomy, Space Science Course. And I go into this at a much more detailed level. Okay. Let's be the next topic. Oh, this is a good one. The Caucasian race, of which I'm one, let me just quick go through the history of this. When Moses came out of Egypt with the Israelites, they were white Caucasians, blue eyes, blonde haired, and it wasn't the slavery situation that is denoted in history, and they weren't Jews. So don't mix them up with Jews. There were no Jews in following Moses out of Israel. That's a stolen story. They were Israelites. And so anyway, they crossed the Red Sea, and this is during the passage of Venus the comet, and which eventually became the planet Venus. And that's what the Velikovsky story is all about. But those tribes, the 12 tribes, then they, according to the story, wandered in the desert. And they migrated up into the foothills of the Caucasus Mountains, what we call the Caucasus Mountains today, populated north of the Black Forest, and through northern Europe. They were cut off from Spain by the Pyrenees Mountains, and then they migrated to England and Ireland, and then into the Scandinavian countries, where my ancestors, the Vikings, came down and populated northern and western Ireland. So anyway, that's kind of the story. But part of their success through these thousands of years, because the Venus event, I'm not going to put a date on it, but we're talking thousands of years B.C., part of their success as they moved through. Now, remember this story in the Bible. They were looking for the land of milk and honey. Well, if you're looking for the land of milk, then you should be lactose tolerant. Lactose being a component of raw milk. And you can remove lactose from milk to make it. But back in those days, they were just drinking it raw, unpasteurized, like I do today. So anyway, we have unpasteurized milk, but the food source of the Caucasians, because most other races, if you go to Africa, or if you go to Northern Africa, or if you go to Arabia, or the Ashkenazi Jews, or the fake Jews, or whatever you want to call them, are lactose intolerant. So on a broad scale, even though there are maybe a few people within those groups that could drink milk, for example, the majority of them are lactose intolerant. And so when you look at the scripture, one of the biggest things that stands out is with Moses and the Israelites is their search for the land flowing with milk and honey. Well, you wouldn't be looking for the land flowing with milk and honey if you were lactose intolerant. Because you'd be looking for something that makes you throw up. The Caucasians were the ones who succeeded, and the fact that they had milk from cows. Now, just look at this. You take an animal, pretty much harmless, doesn't do anything but stand there and eat grass. You can store up grass for the winter time, and they can eat grass and continue producing milk. The milk produces cheese and other byproducts that are at long-term storable, so it gives them a food source. And then when the cow gets older, then you can butcher it and you have the meat. So it's a tremendous source of food. It doesn't require much work. A little bit of just keeping them in a certain area, but cows are not going to go running away as long as you have a good area for them to eat grass. They're going to stand there and eat grass. You don't need a rope or a fence or anything. So it's a source of food, an essential one. Now let's take another group of people, the Native Americans, the Plains Indians who depended on the buffalo. What did the white man do when they wanted to eradicate the Plains Indians? So they went out and shot all the buffalo. You had people like Buffalo Bill, and I don't know if you've ever seen these pictures of buffalo skulls piled up, like a mountain of them, tens of thousands of them in a pile. And this is what the was done. These people would go out and ride the trains, and the trains would be going through the buffalo herds, and these guys are there shooting the buffalo, just letting them rot and die. But anyway, it killed the food source of the Plains Indians, who then, and I don't like that term Indians because it was a misnomer from Columbus because he thought he was in India. So the Native Americans, sorry for trying to be a little bit politically correct here, but the Native Americans, and even that name doesn't apply. We should have a much better name. But anyway, their sustenance was destroyed, and that's what broke them. Today, the global climate control nutcases and all these little college students running around, jumping up and down, oh, climate change, climate warming, all the groups running around out there, talking about climate change, it's not a scientifically viable topic. It doesn't make any sense. Although there's an issue of pollution and using too much oil, that's a different story. But anyway, what they're using global warming for is a political tool. And so they're worried about the gases, the methane gas being given off by cows, saying, oh, it's going to pollute, it's going to cause the global temperature to go ski-waggy, out of control, and we're all going to die. And the end result is if you took the buffalo herds and the herds of Africa, of all the different animals, big animals, we're talking elephants, we're talking animals much bigger than the American buffalo, and all these had the American buffalo, millions and millions and millions of these on the plain, dwarfing any cattle herds that the world has today, all giving off methane constantly, and there was no global warming. There was no fear of the ice cap melting. This is just a modern phenomenon, supposedly. So you see that the global warming agenda or narrative doesn't make any sense. It has no logic at all, but goofy little college students don't know anything because they've never been taught to reason or logic and understand things, so they write their little essay papers so they can get an A on their little course in college, and then they come running out to change the world, not knowing anything, not having any clue. But the bottom line is they want to get rid of cattle because it is a main source of food that goes back thousands of years for the Caucasians. And so make no mistake about it, this is an attack on Western white civilization and culture, historically, trying to get rid of cattle and replace it with bug protein. Yeah, eat some worms, buddy. Yeah, Bill Gates, eat some worms in place of hamburger. You'll be healthy. Oh, let's see. I'm sure Bill Gates has not eaten bugs. That's the true situation of what's going on. So they're killing a food source, and the agenda is destruction of the middle class Caucasian family. Let's put it like it is. That is the main. If you look at everything else that's going on, it all comes back to that. I could go on and on about that, but I wanted to make that clear that the destruction of cattle herds is a direct assault on a specific population. Okay, this is an interesting story. Virgin Galactic announces its first commercial flight that is going to take place next Tuesday, either the Tuesday is the 27th, so it's a window of the 27th to the 30th. So next week from Tuesday on to about Friday, this flight could take place. So I'll certainly be tracking this. They have three Italian Air Force personnel, and they have three researchers from the National Research Council of Italy. And so these are six people, all from Italy, who are going on the very first flight. Now, they allegedly, from what the article was talking about that I saw, they have sold 800 tickets. And the original tickets were selling for around $200,000. So if you multiply that out, that's around $160 million that they've raised, that they've got in the bank account. But they can't spend it because they got to deliver the product now. But now the tickets are going for upwards of $450,000 each per person. Okay, so that brings you up to a tidy sum per flight. Now, the cost of these flights, since they're using reusable spacecraft, the White Knight 2 carrier vehicle, which goes up to about 50,000 feet with normal jet engines, then they release the orbit. It's not an orbiter. They don't go into orbit. They just go up to the edge of the space about 50 miles up. And then they free fall so they could keep going up. They cut the rocket engine. Then they're going up and then back down. And they say they're in about a free fall for a couple minutes. So it's not a complete weightlessness. But they are going to do some experiments, some microgravity experiment research on the time that they're up in space here. Then they return to the Spaceport America launch and runway system, which is in New Mexico. So they're basically taking off from a runway and returning to a runway. And that is my personal belief, that that is the system that will win out in the long run. So next week, by this time next week, my show, maybe we'll have some information about this. And I also I think there's a lot of people who would like to see Richard Branson fail. It's because he's too independent. He's going for one of his other ventures. That's the Virgin Galactic Launch System, which is setting up micro satellites. I believe they've actually stalled that program, shut it down. But he's going ahead with the commercial flight. These are basically like a circus ride or a Ferris wheel ride into space. But there's some seriousness to it in that, for example, these people are on this current flight will be doing actual research. And so I think that it's a matter of probably a few years where Branson will have orbital capability. Blue Origins and SpaceX already have very much orbital capabilities, and it looks like Elon Musk is very far out ahead of everybody. And I'm sure he has some excellent engineers that he picked up. Who would you want to work for if you had been working for one of the major aerospace companies for years under NASA contracts, sitting there bored out of your mind, doing government top-down contracts, and then you have a chance to go work for a company like SpaceX, which is just progressive and is breaking barriers on all fronts. Who would you want to work for and make more money? A lot more money. Wow. So these engineers have been pent up for decades, and a lot of them are older. I know some of them. A lot of them are older. They're really good. And they really, and this is what's going on. So just that's kind of related to this Gen Z generation where the kids learn about, you know, in college they learn about the 87 different genders they believe in. That's what they learn, but they don't know anything. They don't know how to do anything. So these older people are continuing to work, and they're very good workers. They're very astute. It used to be that when you were 60, you retired. 2 years later, you were dead. And that was the whole idea of Social Security. You wouldn't have to pay it out very long. But now people are living to 70s and 80s, and they're working. They're very active and very mentally active, and they're very good. They have a lifetime of experience, and you can't replace that with some punk kid that comes out of a liberal arts college that doesn't know anything. So let me just say, though, I've met a lot of young people who are very good at what they do, and they are very good engineers. So they're out there, but you got to find them, and you got to weed them out from the ones that are too worried about themselves and their safe zones or whatever else they're worried about. You gotta search out the ones that are capable of actually doing something, and they're out there. I've met some excellent young scientists, engineers. Okay. So anyway, keep an eye on that Virgin Galactic flight coming up next week. And that kind of popped out of nowhere. There was not much in terms of announcements. It wasn't a failure. They came in too low on their re-entry when Branson went up. That was like, you know, how long ago was that? But they sat down with the FAA, cured their problems, took a little bit of extra time to make sure everything is set up to perform according to all the different specifications. They're ready to go. So hooray for them. Good for them. I saw a video. Now, this is an amazing story. I saw a video of an eagle. In the first scene you see, it's just waves, big, big waves, probably 4-foot waves. I don't know if this is on a lake or an ocean or what. But anyway, all you see are these wings coming up above the waves, like bird wings. And all of a sudden, this eagle emerges, flapping its wings and lifting up with both claws, with all its tenons, into a fish. And this is probably, looking from the size of the eagle and looking at the size of this fish, this is probably about a 20-pound salmon. That's my estimate of what it is. And the fish, of course, is kicking and screaming. And the fish had been just floating along the surface. And this eagle comes down, grabs it with all of its talons, and goes flying up, lifting up above the waves. And the eagle is working really hard. But it struck me that the eagle is a predator. If it doesn't kill something, it doesn't eat. It lives because of killing other smaller prey animals. And that's a predator. And so this is repeated, whether it's a lion an African animal, a cat, you know, wild dogs or whatever. If they don't kill, they don't eat. And so they get good at that, and that's what a predator is. And that's their role in the food chain. So anyway, this eagle is lifting up, and I got a question for you. Do you think that eagle is going to let that fish go? And the answer is an affirmative. That is for sure, the eagle is not going to let that fish go. After all the work, and I'm probably flying around for a number of hours looking for a fish that's right at the surface, a big one that, you know, you can take home and feed the kids, that eagle gets down there, gets his claws into this fish, both his claws, and it's lifting up, and that fish is like squirming back and forth. But that eagle is not going to let that fish go. That's lunch. He spent too much time, so he's got a grip on it. He's flying. He's got his wings, and he's flying out of there. And I want to compare this to the people that are running the world today. They're predators. They're predators, and they have society in their claws. That's you. That's everybody out there listening. They have you, and they're not going to let go because this is their one chance. And it's like that fish. If that eagle for 1 second loses its grip, that fish can spring loose, fall back in the water, and live to see another day. They have a bunch of holes in his back, but those will patch up and cure. But that eagle is not going to let go. And that's the case where you have to understand the mentality of predators. They're, you know, they sneak in from above, like the eagle. The fish is there sunning itself or up on the top of the water, you know, just swimming around. The eagle comes in, grabs him, and walks away with him and has no intention of letting go. And it has to consume that fish to live for its sustenance. That's what the eagle's motivation is. It's a predator. The people running the world today are predators. The Bill Gateses, the Warren Buffetts, the George Soroses of the world are predators. They live on killing other people. And they don't have to. In the case of the eagle, the eagle's got to eat. In the case of these people, they have plenty of food, they have plenty of money, but they are predators in the sense that they are psychologically deranged. And once they get their claws into society, they're going to continue. So you're dealing with psychologically disturbed people. They don't have to destroy society, but they're going to do it. And you see the other people that they're minions that go all the way down to school boards, to mayors, to city council, governors, legislators, judges, the court system, on and on and on. And like, say, the White House staff right now, completely filled with degenerate people. So anyway, that's part of the structure, because those people like Soros or you know, wealthy people that control things cannot do anything by themselves. They need all of these other minions keeping the clogs of the wheel moving. Anyway, I just wanted to instill this in you, that the eagle catching the fish, being a predator, is not going to let go. And that's the same as the people operating, running the world, the bankers, you know, the whole laundry list of politicians, agencies in the government, on and on and on. Okay, just a quick mention here about mountain building. The standard story of mountain building is that plate tectonics, somehow these plates move around, and somehow in the middle of a plate there's pressure and it forces these mountains up. And I've had many experiences in my life. I've seen many of the big mountain ranges of the world up close and personal, driving around them, climbing in them, etc. And when you look at them, these are ripped up out of the earth. They are thrust up. That's why they call them upthrust mountains. And there's no way some little plate tectonic movement is going to form mountains. Let me just explain to you something. If the world formed by the method that NASA tells you, that it was a hot ball, it was a hot molten ball, and it slowly cooled over a long period of time, and then solidified, and then these plates formed, those plates would be cracking and separating and moving apart, and all they would be shrinking. So there wouldn't be any place for sideward motion for them to come and crash together and move one under the other. It doesn't make any sense. And there's certainly no mechanism for mountain building. So these textbook images of mountains forming because of plate tectonics, that's what it is. It's an artist's conception in a textbook. It has no reality in physics. And, of course, most of the geologists probably didn't do very well in physics 101. So they didn't, you know, they don't understand conservation of momentum or energy. The amount of energy to lift up a mountain range, 20,000, 30,000 feet, and all the matter by a sideways force that's coming next to it. And these, by the way, this whole idea of plate tectonics, plates are a misnomer. The Earth is not made up of plates. It's very loosely conglomerate of dirt and even granite rock. If you took up a piece of granite, say 1 mile long, say you could take a cut a piece of granite out of the Earth 1 mile long and try and pick it up, it would crumble into a million pieces because it's not strong on that level. It doesn't have body. It doesn't have sustenance on that level. If you took up a piece of granite 100 feet wide, okay, that piece of granite can hold together. But probably over 100 feet, that piece of granite is going to break because of the weight of the granite. And you can only, say, hold it up at the ends. It's going to break. It doesn't have strength. And if you get out to a mile or 10 miles, there's no strength at all. Even in the hardest rock that you can find on planet Earth, over a mile or two, there's no strength. So the idea that thousands of miles away, the plates are moving and forcing mountains up is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. There's no physics that supports it. Okay, so anyway, just wanted to get that in. Okay, I think I've hit all the topics tonight. That's unusual. I usually have more topics left over. But just remind you, go to the webpage for the summertime pre-4th of July sale on water filters. You get an extra 10% off using the coupon code that's on my webpage on any orders over $300. So any orders, that would be the 10 packs of gravity feed water filter elements, the make your own, there's the make your own water filter products there, the sink filter, or the MR5, of course, which has a tremendous price on it for this summer sale, plus an additional 10% off, and free shipping. Free shipping to the 48 states. Most of the products ship free to Alaska and Hawaii also, but the bigger things that go UPS, we charge extra for Hawaii and Alaska. And we're also shipping to Canada now. If you live in Canada, we charge you a little bit extra. We send you a PayPal invoice for that extra shipping, but it's usually not too much. Even for an MR5 system, it might only be another $35, $40. Webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. jmccwaterfilters.com. And thanks a lot. And by the way, this is a commercial-free show. The only income I have is when you purchase something or go to my webpage, etc., or my new book, also on Amazon, The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem, available on Amazon. And all my other books are available on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.